Welcome to Section 9, where we talk about IT and information security. I'm Damian Hull.
And I'm Dorothy.
And today we're going to do something a little different. I wanted this to be about our critical security controls and inventory of hardware. This was going to be part two of that. And unfortunately, there's a lot of things that have come up. I have to study for the CISSP. I have a lot of work things going on. And then when you look at the critical security controls, we're trying to implement the first seven. That's time consuming. And so what I think people need to do, and we need to do this, and we have done this, so we're doing okay, is we need to do a quick evaluation of our overall security. Is there anything that we're doing that reduces overall risk in terms of security, right? Are hackers going to get in? Are there gaping holes within our security? I think you need to think about these things, because even if you have free time to implement the critical security controls, it's going to take a while. If you're in a larger organization, you're trying to do all 18 of the critical security controls, it's time consuming. This is going to happen over years. And so the question is, do you have any security implemented?
Well, you still need to know what kind of security you have implemented to be able to know how you're going to implement those critical security controls, would you not?
Well, so what I'm thinking about is, are there things you can do to minimize risk while you are thinking about implementing the critical security controls?
Okay.
Because you may have giant holes within your security. You can't just leave those there while you say, well, we're going to leave that giant hole that an attacker can just walk through while we implement the critical security controls. That's not going to work, because what's going to happen is you will get compromised. The hackers will have fun on your network, and then you're going to be in big trouble. So you don't want that. And so you have to have a process by which to kind of do these kinds of things. So let's talk about what we have on our systems now that is making me feel warm and fuzzy about our overall security and making it harder for the attackers to get in. So on our Windows 10 systems, we have Windows Defender for Business. That's our kind of like our AV or endpoint protection. We have application allow listing. This prevents applications from running on our systems that shouldn't be running. So for example, if I click on a link that has malware, it ends up in the downloads folder, and then it doesn't do anything. Because if you try to run it from the downloads folder, because we have application allow listing, it won't work. It won't run at all. And then we also don't log in as admin. We have separate accounts for user and admin stuff. So I'm a regular user on my machine until I want to go do something like install applications or do admin stuff. I have to log in as an administrator, and then I can do those things. So on our Windows 10 systems, that's there for me. That's there for you. And it works really well for us, and it makes it really hard for malware to get into the system and for attackers to take advantage of our Windows 10 machines. Now, on the DigitalOcean side, we have four servers there. We are following hardening guides from DigitalOcean. We use their recommendations for that. We use SSH keys. So when we log in over SSH, you have to have a key to get in. And without the key, you're not going to be able to make a connection. So typically what happens with SSH is you'll make an SSH connection, it will show you a login prompt, and then you try to log in as a regular user or an admin user. In our case, you're not going to get that login prompt without the proper key, and the key has to be added to the system in order for you to make that connection. So that right there prevents a lot of people from getting in and having access to that login page. And then we don't allow the root user to log in, so you have to have a regular account on the system. So even if you had a key, you would still not be able to log in as a regular user because root's not allowed, right? So oftentimes what will happen is you'll have these automated systems out there that try to find an SSH connection and then log in as a root user. We don't allow either one of those things to happen. And then we do use 2FA for things like Microsoft 365 and LastPass. And this is huge because it takes care of the cloud side of things, right? So when somebody's trying to brute force our passwords, it's going to be a little bit more tricky because we have that extra step of two-factor authentication. And they're going to have to find ways of trying to get around that if they're trying to get into our...
And how long are our passwords?
They're long enough. We may want to go back and evaluate that. And as we do or implement the critical security controls, we're going to have to evaluate whether or not our passwords are long enough. And that's where your password policy comes into play. Are you creating a password policy that meets the needs of your organization? And are we actually following that policy? And in our case, we have no policies. So we're not entirely sure what it is we need or why we need them. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to take a look at the critical security controls because I want to look at some of those kinds of things. Now, let's get back to inventory, because I did do some things with Run Zero that are going to be interesting, and you and I are going to have to take a look at these things because there are some interesting things that I'm finding out. So I installed the agents, or deployed the agents, on servers, and then I configured them to run once a day. So we have two agents in two separate locations, and on the free version of Run Zero, you're allowed to have two reoccurring events or tasks. And so what I originally wanted to do was have each agent do a morning and evening scan to catch morning and evening devices. Well, you can't do that because you can only have two reoccurring tasks. So I set it up so that in each location, the task reoccurs every day. And so you, when you log into the system, it's going to give you all this information about those devices. Plus, it tells you, you know, what new devices have we seen in the last X number of days, whatever that may be. One thing that I have noticed is that there are some devices in the listing that don't have a lot of information. It's there, it shows up, you know it's a device on the network, but it doesn't really specify exactly what the device is. It may say, oh, it's a Dell device. That leads me to believe that it's probably one of our laptops, but there are other devices that show up with more of a description of what the thing is, you know, like iPhone, MacBook Air. So you kind of have a better idea of what these things are rather than just, oh, it's a Dell device. That happens because the scanner can't see enough, or it can't gather enough information from that particular piece of hardware to get enough information to identify the device and give more of a description. So that's one of the reasons why when you look at the critical security controls, when it comes to inventory of hardware, they ask you to have an active scanner, which we have, a passive scanner, which looks at network traffic, and then also a DHCP logs to catch other stuff as well in terms of all overall hardware. So the reason why there's three things in there is because of situations like this where we do have information about the device, but not enough to really kind of help you identify that. Because we're tiny, it's not a big deal. We can figure this out. If we were a larger organization and you're talking about hundreds, if not thousands of devices,
that could be a vulnerability that you don't know it's there.
Well, no, you know it's there.
Well, you know it's there, but you don't know what it is.
Exactly. There's not enough information. Now, I should point out that you're partially correct when you talk about devices that are not there. Maybe your active scanner misses a device because it's in a state that can't be scanned. Maybe it's set up in a way that prevents the scanner from seeing that device. So that's where your passive scanner and maybe your DHCP logs come into play, where the active scanner either doesn't have enough information or misses the device completely. You have two other ways of potentially catching that device. So in our case, we're tiny. We kind of know what we have. But the active scanner, Run Zero, is showing us all the things we have on the network.
Can I ask you something? So let's say that we have a vendor, and a vendor plugs in this laptop, and it's only used when the vendor comes over to do whatever the vendor needs to do and have access to whatever it needs to have. But then it's turned off or not used or what have you. Would either scanner pick that up if it's off?
No. And here's the other thing about that too. Because the active scanner only runs in the morning, if the vendor comes in the afternoon,
It's not going to see it.
So that again is why you have to have, or why the critical security controls recommends active, passive DHCP logs, because the active scanner runs on a schedule. It's not there all the time. Now, we could have said run every 2 hours. I could have put that in there, but I chose not to do that because I think that's overkill in our case. But that would be a better way to detect that vendor coming in, plugging in their equipment, doing their work, and then leaving. You're more likely to catch that. So we will have to go back and take a look at the configuration we have for our scanners and say to ourselves, is this enough, or do we need to increase the number of scans we have because we don't have the other things that are recommended, the passive scanner, the DHCP logs. We're not using those things at this point. Maybe we need to increase our scanning times, you know, do once an hour, once every 2 hours, or whatever the case may be.
So I have another question. So let's say that the scanner picks it up because the vendor comes in during a time that the scan is scheduled. But then after that, it's shut off. Would the scanner know, like, okay, this device was in the network, where is it? Or would it be, this device is in the network and is now off? How would that look like?
That's a good question, because one of the things you want to be aware of is you want your inventory to include devices for a number of days, because you don't want to just say, oh, this device came in and now it's gone, let's get rid of it from the inventory. So I think the way that Run Zero works is if the device hasn't been seen in the past, let's say 90 days, I don't remember what the number of days is.
But a certain amount of days.
Certain amount of days, let's say 90. Mm. After 90 days, delete the device. Because it hasn't been seen for X number of days, long enough for you to know this device was there once upon a time. We haven't seen it in 90 days. Let's get rid of it from inventory. If the device comes back and your scan picks it up, it pops it back into...
And it pops it back in the days. I guess for me, the thought of that vulnerability would be if it deletes the device and for some reason there's a change of guard, they get a new IT guy that is supposed to be keeping, you know, track of this thing, and he has no idea that device exists.
Well, but it's not in the scan.
Right.
So if it's not in the scan, most likely it's not on the network, depending on how your scans work. Again, we just pointed out the weakness in the way in which we're scanning once a day doesn't necessarily catch everything. When that vendor comes in the afternoon, plugs in their device, we'll never see it. So those are things you have to be aware of when you are thinking about inventory of hardware, is that you want to make sure you're catching all of these things, including that vendor who comes in the afternoon when your scanner is not activated. You're not going to catch that. So you have to be aware of these things. Now, what's interesting about the active scan that we have with Run Zero is that it's catching all of the VMs we have that are directly connected to the network, meaning that we do have our lab stuff that we're practicing with, and those are behind firewalls. They're VMs, but they're behind firewalls. And the active scanner, Run Zero, doesn't have access to those subnets because they're behind pfSense firewalls. That's perfectly fine as long as it catches the pfSense firewall, which it does have in the inventory. We're aware that something else is going on behind that firewall because we can document that. We can see that. But the fact that it's catching these VMs is really important, because if I happen to have a VM show up that shouldn't be there, then maybe I misconfigured something and placed a VM in part of the network that it shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be there, yeah.
And so then we can say, oh, that's not correct. Let me move that back behind a firewall, and then we're good. So there's lots of reasons why your inventory is really important, and it's not something that you're going to do once, put in a drawer, and walk away. You're going to actively look at this thing, because we're not only looking for unauthorized devices, but devices that are in places they shouldn't be. In this case, I have a lab, I create a VM, I connect it to a network. Whoops, it's the wrong network. I see that in the inventory. Let me pull that out of there, put it behind a firewall. Okay, now we're good. So those are the kinds of things that you're going to be able to catch with these tools. But again, it's time consuming to do these kinds of things. We're tiny, so we can kind of do this a little bit quicker than larger organizations with hundreds, if not thousands, of devices. And so you want to have some way of quickly evaluating your overall security, putting some security controls in place, you know,
and keeping in mind the growth of the network, because then, you know, you may need to adjust, you know, get a different tool, do a different configuration. You never know.
Yeah. And so, like I said, on our Windows 10 systems, we have Windows Defender. We have application allow listing. We don't log in as admins. That's huge. That takes care of a lot of things. And if you're looking at where in the environment you're going to see malware first, it's most likely going to be on workstations and laptops, because that's where the end user is going to be clicking on things. They're going to get that phishing email. Again, the malware is going to come through that, right? They're going to click on something. It'd be downloaded, runs on the system. And then that's it, game over.
But all those factors we have in place are mitigating, some of the issues that could happen. Doesn't mean they're bulletproof, it means that maybe once we get to implement those critical security controls, it's going to be a little bit better. It's going to make you feel even warmer and fuzzier because now you say, okay, they got to try just a little harder, not just with the basics.
Exactly. But because we have these things in place for Windows 10, for two-factor authentication for the cloud stuff that we have, and then we use those hardening guides for our DigitalOcean servers, we can now be busy with other things and know that we have some security in place. It's going to make it harder for an attacker to get in. And so we can take our time with the critical security controls because we have these things in place. Any last thoughts about this?
No, I mean, the one thing that I'm curious about is the questions that I have asked you. Because for me, you know, not having the experience that I don't have, you know, looking at, okay, here's the new tool. This is what you're trying to do to it. And all of a sudden, I keep thinking, but what about this? But what about that? Is this important enough? Is this not? Because I'm trying to figure out a way of, if I had to come up with a process, what would be the things that I need to look at to be able to come up with a process that would work?
And that's where, when you're looking at the critical security controls, that's where the policies come into play. In the policy, you're going to state what it is you feel is acceptable for your organization. The procedure is how you're going to implement that. So if in your policy you say, we really need to detect all devices connected to the network, then your policy may be that you want to specify active scanner, you want to specify passive scanner, you want to specify...
You mean the procedure would be...
Well, yeah. But you may put some of this into the policy and say, hey, the controls are asking for these things. Policy dictates we have an active scanner, we have a passive scanner, we use DHCP logs, but then when you go to the procedure side, you specify how that's going to happen. We're going to use Run Zero as our active scanner. We're going to configure it to run,
So the policy is like, this is how we're going to do it.
Well, the policy is the things that you want to see, you know, the kind of security you want to have. So it's not telling you how to do it necessarily, but it's dictating what you need to have in place.
So it would be more like, okay, the policy that we have, this is what we want in our policy, and these are the tools we're going to use. The procedure is how to do it.
Exactly. You can specify a little bit on tools within the policy if you so choose to. It can be a little bit more broad than that, and then your procedure, because you can just say in
but
the policy...
But wouldn't that be part of the inventory to have, this is what the policy is and what we're going to use, because you're going to... You want to make sure that the tool you're using is a tool you've implemented.
Well, no. So the policy just kind of gives the overall things that you believe are going to be issues within your organization, right? And how do you want to do, or what kinds of things are you trying to minimize in terms of risk, trying to reduce risk? What things are you willing to accept and what things are you willing to...
They're non-negotiable.
They're non-negotiable. Mm. You have to find a way to reduce them or... move them off to somebody else, right? But in this case, you know, we may specify for just the inventory piece, because the critical security controls say you want to have active, passive, and DHCP logs, you could put that in the policy and say, because the critical security controls ask for these things, we want them as part of the policy. The policy dictates you have these things. The procedure tells you how you're going to implement those things. We're going to use Run Zero. We're going to do it every 2 hours, we're going to run a scan. We're going to have this type of...
But then would Run Zero be part of the software inventory? Then?
Yes, okay. Zero is a piece of software that runs on a box. It's an agent.
Okay.
You have to have it part of your the services that you're paying for or the services that you have because you have an account that you have to log into the Run Zero website. So that's also part of another inventory. But when you're just talking about the policy section... versus the procedure, the policy dictates kind of the overall security that you're going to have. The procedure specifies how you're going to implement that. We're going to use Run Zero, because the policy may not say Run Zero.
Right.
The policy may say Active Scanner. And then your procedure says, we're going to implement Run Zero. It's going to scan twice a day or every 2 hours.
Because that's part of your process, implementing the run zero, configuring in a certain way. So you have to have all of that as part of the procedure.
Exactly.
I was just trying to understand it.
When we get to the policy side of things, that's where we'll start talking about these things. Right now, what we want to make sure is that we have some basic security in place to make sure that we have time to implement the critical security controls, do other things, and not be wide open to whoever wants to attack us. And we're
so
fine.
I have another question for you. So having said what you have said and run through the things that we have in our network, how warm and fuzzy are you feeling until you can implement this critical security control? Where are you at on that?
I'm perfectly fine with what we have.
You're okay.
Because the things we have implemented are going to make it so difficult for somebody who wants to try to get in. It doesn't mean that they can't get in.
Right, right. It's not bulletproof.
They're going to have to try really hard to get in, because even if we aren't paying attention to emails and links online and we click something, again, we have Windows Defender, we have application allow listing, that's going to prevent those things from actually running.
And we're not running admin user in our machines.
Exactly. So we have the right tools or the right controls in place to minimize overall risk in terms of security. And I'm perfectly fine with what we have right now. But yeah, as you can see, there's a lot of moving parts to this. You really need to take the time to think about these things. But having some security in place means that you can kind of sit back and relax a little bit while you take the time to implement the critical
security.
Yeah,
you don't have that sense of urgency and then put yourself in a position where you make a mistake when you're trying to implement something that important.
But that's it for now. If you have any comments or questions, you can email us at support@section9.us. If you want to take a look at our show notes, they'll be on our website. And if you haven't subscribed to our show, please do so. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.